constant. Death seems so near. Each year brings more fear. Will I see another season? So many have passed away. When is my day? I pray that I can see the leaves change and fall before I take my last pause. I want to see the snowflakes dancing through the air. Things taken for granted, but now I really care. I want to see another season, for my harvest has not yet come. I want to see another season. Welcome, and thank you for downloading the One Mic, One Voice show. Welcome to the One Mic, One Voice show, Building the Collective Conscience, a show that is created to give space where your voice, ideas, and informed opinions can be heard, appreciated, and debated. I am your co-host, Michael Eric Owens, along with my co-host,
DT.
I'm going to tell you what, man, the other episode, when you hit me with the three names, you scared me, man.
What scared you?
I mean, man, it was powerful, man. I was shocked for a minute, man. I mean, everything just kind of left my head.
You weren't expecting that.
No, I wasn't expecting that, man. That was like a blow from Ali with the left hook or something.
I just thought it would be interesting to get the listeners a little something different at that time. So,
well, you did, and guess what? It was deep, man. But you got to warn me next time. Just tell me you taking it to another level.
Okay.
So how you been,
Michael? Changing the game up this time, man.
That's
ready.
Right. Right.
I'm doing great, man. It's another beautiful day, another beautiful Wednesday. We're here to get the good news out. So what we got today?
Man, and it's only been a week, man, but it seemed like we've been off the mic for months.
It does,
man.
Feel like that.
I've been hungry to get back, man. Matter of fact, I think I text you and Richard last night talking about, man, I can't wait to get back on the mic, man. So it is a pleasure to be here with you. Like you say, the sun is shining. And I just want to hit something, man, a couple of things that – number one is in the local news, but also one that just hit today nationally. This idea of the Oklahoma Labor Commission, Mark Costello's death.
Man, that's a tragic thing. You know, I was telling you the other day we spoke about this. His daughter actually attended St. Gregory's University where I went to school. Wow. And I seen him, you know, in passing a few times, seemed like a really great guy. And it's just tragic to hear, you know, something like that happen to such an important figure in our society.
Man, you know, and his by your own son.
Have terms for, you know, when a son or a mother is killed by their own child. Mm-hmm. Did you know that? Parasite is what they call it if, you know, a parent is killed by their own child. Matricide if it's the mom who's killed, and patricide if the father is killed.
Wow. I mean, when I heard about it, it was late at night, and I was telling Richard, you know, I said, man, I couldn't even sleep. You know, it had me that trouble, you know, having a son myself and, you know, having been in that position, being a son as well. I mean, I couldn't imagine, you know, taking my own father's life or, you know, the mother witness it, what that does to the family. And we know he has some, from the reports that are coming out, if you don't know, Oklahoma Labor Commissioner Mark Costello was murdered by his own son the other day at a restaurant, stabbed to death. And it's coming out that he had some serious mental challenges, if I could say that.
I was also thinking to myself, you know, there's really not a lot of telltale signs that that's going to happen to you, you know. So as a parent, it's really interesting that the relationships you build with your children do matter. But also that, you know, there's really nothing that says, you know, because this, or if you're this type of parent, you could expect this from your child. Now it can go both ways. You know, it's either that situation where you're in and you're feeling like, you know, dad's not there for me. Doesn't listen to me, doesn't make me feel included into the family structure, blah, blah, blah. And then you have the other side is, you know, I pushed this kid too much. I've been too involved, and now they resent me because of it. And so it's like, you know, you have to be careful.
It's a balance.
Yeah, right. There's definitely a balance.
And I don't think people are saying this, but they might be thinking this. It's almost like, okay, what did the parents do wrong?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, because like we're supposed to have like perfect kids, you know, like kids are not accountable for their actions when they get to a certain age. You can do all the right things. Your child has to make the right decisions. And when you have mental health issues involved in it, then it's even more of a difficult situation, whether they're on their medication, whether they have support, they may be in a group, or whether they're working. I mean, all of these things, I think, DT, play a role in making sure that this person that is struggling with a mental illness can somehow live a productive life.
Right. And it's also, you know, making sure that you get the appropriate help for that person. Like you're saying, there are a lot of us who are dealing with mental illness and are not addressing it in a way that has been effective, in a way that could help us either shape and move into a new mental space or give us an opportunity to, like you said, you know, live a better life, just have a better quality of life, given somebody coming in and saying, you know, hey, this is how you need to deal with this next time. Or
You know, and we have a lot of mental illness in the black community.
This is true.
I think some of them folks that just sitting outside the grocery store asking me for money got some issues.
You think they don't?
They tripping.
That's another conversation. You're going to have to hold that. You're going to have to hold that.
We definitely going to have to, man. But I'm here to tell you, man, you know, our prayers go out to his family. You know, I know nobody should rejoice in the death of no one. This is not about ideology of a political stance. This is about the loss of a life, man. And I just, not even about his position. It's about a loss of life, and we should all respect life. And I think the loss of life should touch us all in a way that it causes us to appreciate one another.
That's right. I agree.
Yeah. Wow. And the other thing, just today, this the guy that shot these two reporters in Virginia. And I don't know if you had a chance.
I haven't
to
heard about this yet.
Yeah, it just happened. And two reporters this morning at 6 o'clock this morning were 6:30 were covering a story. I think it was an anniversary of this particular news agency. I wish I had it up right now. But a former employee, a black man, just gunned him down. And he ended up
no cause, just chopping.
Well, they don't know what the answer is right now. But suspect gunned down, fatally shoots his name was Vester Flanagan, black guy. I was telling Richard, my cousin, now she runs a big nonprofit in Portland, but she was a newscaster. She's a lawyer by trade and went into the news business. And for years, she's been talking about the need for security when they go out and report these stories. Right? Because, talks about just the type of people you can run into.
Yeah.
When you out, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But clearly here was a guy that had some issues. He ended up killing himself. So, it's murder suicide. If you want to say that, the initial stories that are coming out is that he was a difficult person to work with. He filed an EEOC complaint against this particular news agency, in which the EEOC found no wrongdoing on their part. He talked about it being of some racial nature, but it didn't hold up to scrutiny. Supposedly, that's what the reports are saying.
So does this sound like to me that he tried to go through a certain protocol, chain of command, if you will, to get a grievance met, and it was not honored or not handled in a way that he felt like was getting his needs met or something, and he felt like he needed to take it to the next level.
Yeah, and it, you know, I think initially that's what it seems like. We'll have to see after the whole story is kind of told, but it's just so tragic that these two, the one reporter was I think about to be get engaged to be married, and it's tragic. How do you go out just do your job and someone guns you down? And, you know, the mentality of gun violence in this country, you know, I I live in Oklahoma. I have guns. Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm just going to keep it real. Mm-hmm. I'm in Oklahoma. Right.
Right.
Okay. But, and so I'm not saying ban all guns, but I'm saying that we need to have a better a better approach to gun safety and who has guns, who's have access to guns, getting guns off of our streets. I mean, we have to do a better job because the senseless killing of people, you know, with guns, by people with guns, it's going up exponentially each and every year.
That's a tall order to fill because you think about the number of people who have guns legally and then the number of people who own guns illegally. You know, are those people going to just, you know, meet in the middle of the street and relinquish all their weapons to and be have them redistributed back into society or to the people who, you know, feel like they deserve guns? Or kind of a really challenging thing to even get ready for.
Well, it's an enormous problem. You know, it is a problem that one must not stop working to solve in some capacity. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not a lawmaker. You know, I'm not a millionaire, you know, and I'm not getting paid to fight those fights, man. But I think we have to be more socially conscious in what is happening each and every day, because this dude was disturbed. He shouldn't have an access to a weapon. Now, you might say, well, hey, look, you know, Mike, he could have got it off the streets. Well, he probably could have, but does that mean we do nothing about gun violence in mm-hmm. our country? I mean, it's like looking at it from a macro level, not a micro level. And at the micro level, two wonderful people from all accounts, people, period. I don't care if you call them wonderful or great or nice. They lost their life, and they should not have. Oh, man. It's, you know, one mic, one voice. It's just a sad reality, DT, that we're seeing this happen each and every day. And then also in the news.
Going back, sorry. I read a statistic, too, you know, after we talked about the murder of Costello.
Mm-hmm.
There's a statistic that says at least five parents die in the U.S. every week. Murdered by hand of a child.
Wow.
Did you know that?
No, I was not aware of that.
Five parents every week.
Wow. Yeah. I think it was Tupac that said death around the corner.
Death around the corner. I mean, he also said keep your head up.
All right.
He also said.
Well, I did not know that statistics, and that is staggering to know that. There is that much animosity, and the outcome of that is death. Mm-hmm. Man, what happened to working it out?
Whatever happened to talking it out?
Yeah, just getting beyond it. And then I was going to transition, and then we're going to come back to something related to Tupac. But I was going to transition to, this idea of, this Black Lives Matter movement. And the attack, I don't know if you saw this grandmother that there was a young girl that was killed by a drive-by shooting at home doing her homework.
Mm.
Okay. Which we all know is just, it's horrible. It's senseless. The loss of life. And we've talked about black on black crime on this show. And the grandmother went on this rant on YouTube, and they had her on CNN, and she was talking about how, the problem is with black people and the idea that we're outraged about, the killing of young black males by white cops is ridiculous when we're killing each other and so forth and so forth. And in the end, Don Lemon, he asked her about white privilege. She said, well, white privilege doesn't exist because she has a white friend who is poor and can't provide money for food. So white privilege doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand she has righteous anger, and I get that. But it's misplaced. It's misguided, mm-hmm. because the two are not synonymous. The black on black crime and police brutality are not synonymous, and they must be talked about in a different vein. And those conversations are happening. Mm-hmm. It's not that black people are not outraged by blacks killing
other blacks. I mean, we've talked about that, but the outrage is different. The outrage is trying to institute programs that build better relationships between police. It's about trying to hold police officers accountable. It's about trying to understand, you know, this idea of police officers being able to protect and to serve in communities and an abusive of that power. Black on black crime is something different. Matter of fact, let me say this, folks. More black people kill black people. More white people kill white people. Okay, so the sheriff that just got killed the other day was killed by a white person. Hmm. Okay, do we say that's white on white crime? No.
I rarely even hear that said at all.
Exactly.
As a thing that even exists, you know, what is white on white crime?
You know, because what I think is, black people are looked at being kind of in this container, if I could say mm-hmm. that, you know, this large kind of container that has well-defined, I think, walls in this sort of boundary. And so black on black crime, because it's in this container, is black people's problem mm-hmm. and black people need to fix it. In other words, you need to be outraged and you need to fix it ourselves. Well, black on black crime is just crime in general, mm-hmm. which is not just in the black community. There's crime everywhere. Probably more Latinos kill Latinos mm-hmm. Than any other race. Okay, but it's the stigmatization and in my opinion, the over emphasizing of what happens in the black community as it is to other things that happen. And so it just bothers me when we would not assign. And again, I was just looking at TV and you see these incidences of people being murdered. We never said, well, that's white on white crime.
Right.
You know, well, that's because you know they're not
funny?
In the container.
You know what's funny? Depending on what crime happens, whatever you hear about, say it's a church being bombed, you know, there's a identity attached to who committed that crime. If there's a store that's being robbed or jacked or whatever, you know what I'm saying? There's an identity that's attached to that crime. And so not only do we have these differentiations, white on white, black on black, Hispanic on Hispanic, but we also have a distinction for who commits a certain type of crime. So if you hear something, you'd be like, well, no, that couldn't have been black people. Or if you hear something that's like, oh, okay, well, that must have been a black person, you know, who done that. And so there are these other little structures that are happening also inside of the bigger scheme of things. You know, you're putting it on a macro scale, not just talking about that lady who says that white privilege doesn't exist because she has a white friend that's poor. That's micro. That's personal. On a macro scale, there is a privilege that does exist that she may not be a part of at the moment, but it exists for her to enter in at any time, should she be a certain, you know, stature of person.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I just thought that was just extremely interesting to, you know, when I see these things, man, I should just text you, man. So, you know, take a look at this because and again, my heart goes out to her. And again, I'm the first one. I don't want to see anyone lose their life. I think it's all tragic, but I think we have to approach it in some type of sensible, logical way to understanding these things. Man, straight out of Compton.
Straight out of Compton. Oh, man, that was such a great movie, man. Like, I feel like the people who seen it before everybody kind of hyped it up, you know, go see this movie. It's such a great movie. It was better for them than it was the people who heard the hype and then went to go see it, because now you had these either high, very high expectations or unrealistic expectations, and then you either get your feelings hurt or you really enjoy what you saw. But for myself, man, I caught it before the crowd hyped it up, and yeah, I loved it, man. It was a great movie.
Well, you know, and I agree with you. There was a lot of I think, interesting things happening in that movie, just the struggle that was going on within their community, which is so similar to the community I grew up in and community that others have grown up in at that particular time. And even now, I think it gave a glimpse for people that have not seen that type of community, that type of inner city community. Mm. You got a glimpse of that, man, and it was raw.
Yeah,
and it was deep. It was, you know,
man. Think about the first scene. You know, Easy's in the drug house, and the deal go wrong. They use the batter around the,
they used to do that, man. Just tear the whole door off. I mean, it was, I mean, just that day to day,
the hostility in that, man.
Yes,
I can only imagine. You know, that, like you're saying, that being a day-to-day occurrence, not just something you deal with on the weekends. You know, that's everyday life.
And you learn to adjust it. And I think it kind of gave, you know, and of course, we know this coming out of the West Coast. And then, of course, you had the East Coast and so forth, which had kind of a different flavor to it. But NWA, right? Okay.
NWA.
All right. And we say on the One Mic, One Voice show that we use the word for analytical purposes, and it NWA stands for niggas with an attitude. And they did have an attitude. They had an attitude about the living conditions, about police brutality, you know, about just the struggle of trying to make something of yourself. Now, by no way, DT, am I going to dismiss the misogyny, you know, the language, you know, just the, you know, the interpersonal relationships that they were having and the things they said, man. I mean, it's kind of hard to take.
Yeah. But I think as I was having this conversation with somebody else, it was like really opposed to going to watch the movie just because of the language, just because of some of the things that you're talking about happen. It doesn't mean that they didn't happen. You know, you can turn your eye or turn your head, close your eyes, whatever the case may be. But these things have happened in our history and have a place in our history because they happen. Because at the end of the day, whether you're taking it in as something that, okay, this is an artistic form of art, you know, somebody is putting this out there just so people can see it. You know, that's a whole different mindset than somebody else who's really grown up listening to NWA, couldn't wait for the movie to come out because they were such a fan back then, or, you know, that movie may remind them of something that happened in the 80s and the 90s that brought a good feeling about, you know?
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that if you grew up in that time, you had to identify. It had to spark something in you. Man, I remember the house parties, okay? You know what, man? I remember
Mike, could you cut a rug?
Hey, oh, man, I still got some skills.
Okay.
We might have to put the camera on and get the moving up in here, DT. And, you know, I remember, man, the Jerry Curls and all that, man, and all the shady characters and just... you know, I grew up with cats that all they did was just hustle on the streets.
Yeah.
That's all they did was hustle on the streets. And so you had to, if you came from that era, and even if you didn't, I mean, there's some shadows of that in the Black community today. But you know, in all of that, I think if we want to call it some kind of pseudo positive, because I know we got our critics out there, DT, that's saying, you know what, they shouldn't have been cussing, they shouldn't have been doing this and talking about women like that. And listen, we're not going to disagree with you. But as DT has said, history is history. If you're going to tell it, you tell it authentically. You tell the complete picture and you deliver it unadulterated so that people can understand. There was some revisionist history going on in that movie, too. Dr. Dre.
We talked about him in his issue with keeping his hands to himself.
I mean,
particularly in the women department.
Wow. Wow.
Oh, man. Man, this is, there's so many, so many jumps to make in this movie. I mean, the movie was so, action-packed, you know, in regard to, you know, like you're talking about the interpersonal relationships that were going on within the group itself, the outside stuff going on with their families and, you know, in the community, with the police and all of that. But man, you know, not getting off Dre's case, but because we know. But man, talk about Suge Knight and his portrayal in that movie. And this guy, now I'm not sure if this is true or not. Don't quote me, but I read an article that said Suge Knight was suing Dr. Dre and Ice Cube for $200 million before the way that he was portrayed in that movie. And I quote, he said he was portrayed as soft. Now, I don't know what movie Suge Knight seen, but wasn't nothing soft about that cat in this movie.
Oh, man. Man, if that was soft, I don't want to see hard.
He said, man, I was knocking cats out on a daily basis. There's no way I would have let Dre. It was a scene in the movie, him and Dre getting into it.
Yeah.
He said, no way I would have let Dre talk to me like that, to my face. You know, would have rearranged his face if that was a real Suge. He said, if y'all going to show Suge Knight, show the real Suge, the one that was punching teeth out every day for breakfast. those type of comments don't help your position, especially, you know, this man facing an extenuous jail sentence and, you know, trying to fight for his life in a sense. And then this, the comeback or comment you have to make about a movie, you know, that wasn't about you.
Yeah.
But, you know, you got a few parts in this movie and you think you're not as hard or as tough as you should have been. Or killed enough people in the movie as you should have.
He a dangerous man.
He is dangerous.
Even to come to that realization that I wanted you to show just how brutal I am as a person.
Yeah.
You know, again, I don't want to run into Shook, man. I don't either. So I'm just, you know,
Shook, if you're listening.
If you're listening, man, I hope they keep you, bro. I'm just going to be honest with you, man, because you're a dangerous brother. You're a dangerous man. And you know, I thought Dre was portrayed really like an angel, man.
Yeah, like the mediator and a nice guy.
Yeah. And I really like Dre, man. I think they missed an opportunity to speak about his narrative in a very positive way, to show how he has changed. He's been married 19 years now. We've heard nothing, you know, about him and his wife ever coming out and as far as any domestic violence. And so I thought they missed a perfect opportunity to show his evolution and how he came through as a man. I mean, he was a boy as a man and came to respect women and came to build, I think, a economic empower and really bring others along. So I thought they missed a grand opportunity by omitting that. And I would even say the argument for hip hop is that hip hop is authentic, that hip hop speaks the truth and speaks of those things that make people uncomfortable that they don't want to really hear. Well, to me, it is hypocritical to omit. That element of truth in relations to, because those women, somebody might say, well, that wasn't really related to the story. It was actually in the first draft of the story.
I see. I didn't know that.
Yeah. It was actually there and they took it out. And the director of Straight Outta Compton, Gary Gray, I believe that's what his name is. He was the cameraman for Dee Brown? Is that her? The one that was hip hop reporter that was attacked by
Dee Barnes,
absolutely.
Yeah.
And he was actually her cameraman, and so he know the story is true.
Mm-hmm.
And to omit that, I thought was. You know, I don't want to.
Well,
they paid
Dee Barnes back then, you know, for this whole thing. So she made enough money, obviously, to quit her job.
That ain't what she said.
That's not what she said.
Nah, she said a lot of people think that she got all types of money that she never have to work again. She said that wasn't the case, and she also went as far as to say, because she just recently released an article about it,
okay,
and she talked about how they really blackballed her in the business. She couldn't get a job after that.
Mm.
And so her career was basically ruined. And now she's writing a book about that experience, man. And I think this sparks, you know, if you don't come clean about these things, it sparks other things, because people, Bill Cosby, you know, people want to tell their story. And if you won't validate it for them, if you won't come full circle, and I'm not going to say it's convenient for Dre to come out right now and apologize. Well, I just said it though, didn't I? But anyway, but
and
anyway,
now he did though. He did give an apology.
Yeah, I don't mean a general apology.
Yeah, general apology. It's not like he got on the mic and said, "Hey guys, I messed up."
Yeah, yeah.
But you know, he did. Right and left, he and, did.
You know that I. Bye-bye, you know that I did. Man. Yeah, he didn't do that though.
One of the mothers of his children was shot at by him during an argument. Did you know that?
No, I didn't know
and
that.
And this is where I caught the information about Dee Barnes, because she had also mentioned that they were together at this time while that whole Dee Barnes thing was going on and that Dre did give her a large sum of money.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, she wasn't directly in relationship with him. She said they were on and off for a while, but during that time she did recall him giving her a large sum of money. So I don't know, there's multiple sides to the story, I guess, but we don't know, because we weren't there.
Ice Cube, played by his son, man.
Ice Cube, man, I gained so much more respect for Ice Cube after seeing this movie.
Cube,
man, the guy is a genius. Took the time to get the experience in producing to be able to put forth a quality movie. And also during the movie, you know, you got to see him as the man who stood up for what he believed in. Because there was a lot of frackle-knackle going on, and Ice Cube was like, "Look, man, y'all either going to respect my grind, respect my hustle, respect me as a man, or I got to walk away."
Absolutely.
And that's what he did.
Money didn't mean anything.
Exactly.
You know, the brother I wonder, did he play baseball, though?
Play baseball,
because he was using that bat up in there.
Oh, yeah, when he
he was like Hank Aaron.
Now, if you have not seen this movie by now, we're sorry, lots of spoiler alerts going on right now, but go check it out. If you need to stop this episode right now, please do. But we're talking about Straight Outta Compton.
Don't stop the episode though. Listen up,
even if it spoils, even if it spoils the movie.
But hey,
Mike said, keep listening.
That's right. Keep listening. Listen, we're going to be back in one moment. Stick around. Don't go nowhere. We got Gregory Jerome coming up talking about the first hip hop festival. He is in the house with me and DT. Don't go nowhere.
Be sure to share and like us on our Facebook page, One Mic, One Voice Podcast. If you guys would like to email in questions, comments, or topics, you can reach me, DT, at onemiconevoice.com or Michael Eric Owens at onemiconevoice.com.
Welcome back to the One Mic, One Voice show, Building the Collective Conscious, a show that is created to give space where your voice, ideas, and informed opinions can be heard, appreciated, and debated. You know what, man? I am excited once again.
Another great guest in the house.
Oh, man. Gregory Jerome. Now, before we let this brother come up to the microphone, because he is capable, folks, of taking over the whole show. So what I need to do, I got to set some ground rules here. But man, let me tell you something. I have known this brother for several years now. And when I say a man that is doing some amazing things, not just good things, DT,
amazing
things, not just in Oklahoma City, but nationally. And when we first met, I was the director over at the Ralph Ellison Library, and we met, and he was doing some programming. Matter of fact, he was doing something with the Tulsa race riots that he was bringing to the entire city. And when I first met him, I said, man, this is a smooth brother right here. I can't tell him yet. I got to keep checking. I got to keep checking him out for a while, right? And but, man, let me tell you something. He is a dude, all right, that will collaborate with you. But also, he is a guy that has vision and he brings things to reality. And so, man, we just want to welcome you to the show, man. And I appreciate you taking out your time, because I know you planning something, man, magnificent in the city here. But, man, just tell our listeners, man, a little bit about you.
Well, first of all, I want to say thanks for having me on the show. It's an honor and a pleasure to be here, to be a guest on the show. One mic, one voice.
Yes, sir.
All the way, right? Yeah. Gregory Jerome. I was born in Oklahoma City. I didn't have the opportunity to be raised here. I was actually raised in a place called Texarkana, Texas, Arkansas. Mm-hmm. But I represent that whole city, both sides.
I understand.
Because when my mother moved away when I was a toddler, we first moved to Texarkana, Texas. And then we eventually moved to Texarkana, Arkansas. Mm-hmm. And so I'll say I represent the whole city.
All right.
You know, I've been to numerous schools, you know, in that city. Yeah. So I represent the city. So I went there until my senior year of high school. And then I came back to Oklahoma due to, you know, some rebellious acts in high school. I was a rebel.
Understand.
I was a rebel in high school, man. So I came back here my senior year of high school and graduated from Edmond Santa Fe. Mm. So I kind of reunited back with the city, you know, I'm back home. I can call it home because it's my birthplace rather, you know. But after that, I went to college. I actually went to college, at NEO and played ball there for a little bit and got a business degree and transferred down to, Tennessee, Murfreesboro for the recording industry. So I went to school out to MTSU and, was in the music industry for a while. And when I was in school, I used to tour with national recording artists, some legends, Bone Thugs and Harmony, Juicy J, 3-6 Mafia, like those guys when I was in college.
Yeah.
You know, that was pretty fascinating, you know. College kid on tour with like these guys, man, and just like hanging out with like these artists.
Yeah.
You know, it was pretty cool. But then a few years in the scene, some family issues came to existence, so I had to come back home and leave everything behind in Nashville, mm-hmm. and just come here and like start over. Like, mm-hmm. and so since I returned back home, you know, I returned back home in 2009, but previously before then it was years. I used to pray about coming back to Oklahoma City and doing something that's positive and great for the city. More or less. It's like, I wanted to be a positive poster face, not necessarily like, you know, the hip hop icon of Oklahoma, or the local celebrity of Oklahoma City. Like, I want to be a positive poster face for the city.
No doubt.
Like,
no doubt.
Represent the city in a positive format, no matter if it's educational or music.
Dig it.
Well, it seems like Oklahoma's been calling you for a long time. So I'm glad you responded and came back, for sure. Talk about, you know, the Hip Hop Festival, man. And but before you go to that, talk about what you've been doing with hip hop and how you've been using that to bring about positive change and positive social consciousness toward the genre itself.
Back in 2011, at a performance, a guy by the name of Michael Eddins, he was over the Oklahoma Arts Council at that time, as far as like outreach programming and things of that nature. And so he approached me after the performance and he was like, "Hey, do you have a curriculum for what you do?" And I was like, I paused for a moment. And I said, "I'll get one for you." You know, Slick 150, man. Slick 150. I'm like, "I'll get one for you." So I went home. I did some research, you know, about 72 hours worth of research. Looked at the programs. Then I looked at the knowledge that I'd obtained and my experience, my personal life and things of that nature. And I developed a curriculum. It was the history of hip hop and lyrical development curriculum.
Oh.
So I took it to him. He checked it out. He loved it. So he hired me. He hired me as a contractor to do a outreach program with Oklahoma City Police Department, gang prevention for the northeast side of Oklahoma City.
Wow.
The FAC program. So I worked with them and I worked with a company called Reduction Theater at that time. Mm-hmm. That was my first time getting in to actually, you know, do a curriculum or teach hip hop, was this opportunity. So I took it and it had a great response. You know, the kids reacted to it well. They were engaged. They just lit up. They had a place where they could actually, you know, release some positive self-expression and creativity and using what they are like relatively like attracted to, which is hip hop, and just showed them about the history of hip hop and like the positive consciousness of hip hop. Mm-hmm. I did that first year. They liked it so much, they had me to come back the next year. Now, this time I worked with a guy by the name of Nathan Lee, Inclusion in Art. So we did that one together. We partnered with that. And once that was over, Positive Tomorrows picked me up and asked me to come over. You know, it's a homeless school for K through fifth graders. Okay. In Oklahoma City. So I went over and I did over 150 hours worth of volunteer work with the same curriculum. And they liked it. They really thoroughly enjoyed it, you know. So from that point, I had a vision of actually, like, instead of teaching these kids, like, the history of hip-hop through, like, via websites and, you know, YouTube and things of that nature, like, I want to actually, like, bring each element, distinct element, hands-on. Like, I wanted to bring them the DJ, the graffiti, the emceeing, and the breaking, like, live. Let them touch it. Let them feel it. So that's when I hooked up with a guy by the name of Angel Little, who came on, and then Dell and some other guys as well. So we actually developed the Elemental Hip Hop program. So now we took that curriculum, the history of hip hop, and Liquid Element curriculum. Now we developed into the Elemental Hip Hop program. So now it's just hands on everything, and it's performance based. So when these kids are finished, no matter if it's a week camp, 20 hours, or if it's 16 weeks, or if it's 24 weeks, whatever the case may be, everything is performance based, and these kids get a chance to get up and display everything that they've learned in these different elements. So some kids like to gravitate to the graffiti, some kids gravitate to b-boying or b-girling, or they go to the DJ, or they get into the MC, you know. And we also emphasize on like soft skills and living skills as well. So it's intertwined with like communication, leadership, teamwork, those type of things. So, and go ahead.
Hold on a minute. See, that's what I was saying.
Can't hear that?
See, I was saying we got to lay down some ground rules. This brother will take over the show, man. I told you, man, he's involved, DT, in so many positive things that are going on.
That's not including other two programs.
Yeah. So, you know, he's just getting started. And you know, but let me ask you this question, though, man. And I'm so glad we got you here, because today we've been talking about hip-hop. From the start, really. You hear all this stuff about the dark side of hip hop,
right?
And this idea that that hip hop is ruining generations of people. What is your response to that?
People are ruining generations of people. It's not music. It's not hip hop itself. It's actually people who decide to shift over into the dark side, who wants to give credibility to the dark side and like live in it, you know. So it's in this world that we live in, it's dark and light, it's good and evil, it's real, it's a spiritual warfare. So you're going to have darkness and you're going to have lightness. So which team are you going to play on? You know, you're going to elevate, you're going to propel, you're going to illuminate people, you know, you're going to bring the positive out of a person, you're going to assist a person to elevate, you know, you're going to build. Like, what are you doing? Because it's demolish or rebuild. Mm-hmm. You know, which one do you want to do?
Yeah.
Well, I want to build.
Yeah.
You know, I can understand like the gangsterism of hip hop. Mm-hmm. Sure, that's part of culture. You know, it's something that we all endured. You know, I won't say all, but most people.
Yeah.
You know, endured that coming up. Like, you have the negative side of it, mm-hmm. but like for me, I've experienced it. You know, I was in a gang life before. Mm-hmm. Yet at the same time, I wasn't talking about shooting up and bang bang though.
Yeah,
I was still on this intellectual mm-hmm. consciousness level,
yeah.
And my friends was looking at me like I was the eyeball, which I was.
Yeah.
You know, what are you talking about, man? I was like, never mind. You know, I came up in a crew of eight. Yeah. You know, almost like Wu-Tang style,
and
I was in the back. Like, I would stay back because they were all on their own level and they connected. But, you know, I still learned from that and understood where they come from, their perception, you know. But at the same time, it's like, okay, what do I do with my information? What do I represent? So it's a representation type of thing. Now, you can glorify this or you can glorify the other.
No doubt.
Well,
no
doubt. I tend to glorify the positive aspect of it. Yeah. And basically, to hit the social consciousness of people, you know, to elevate and provide hope, love, and passion about it. Yeah. So therefore, that's a way to continue to build and open up dialogue with other individuals. Because once you confine yourself into the dark side, that's where you're going to have to stay.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you can't connect with nobody else.
And DT, you were saying the other day about, you know, we were having this conversation about hip-hop. And, man, I wish sometimes, you know, we could have Richard there. You know, he could just flip the switch and get us on, because we're talking about some pretty interesting things. But you brought out something about, when you start listening to certain darker things, as we could say, within the genre, you start questioning yourself about it. You want to talk a little bit about that?
I do, man. But look, you just mentioned this element of the dark side of hip hop. Gregory comes in and talks about kind of maintaining the balance, respecting that there is a both sides, the yin and the yang, the good and the bad, but also deciding for yourself on which side do you want to play for. Am I going to demolish or am I going to rebuild? You and I talked about kind of what I feel or see as a hip-hop conflict, because some of us who have grown up listening to this music our whole lifetime, growing up loving this music our whole lifetime, growing up just being, you know, fully immersed and enthralled in what is considered hip-hop music or culture, as we get older, you know, as our minds gravitate to more important things, different things that are going on within our lives, you know, some of the influence of the hip hop music that we love doesn't necessarily align with our day-to-day lifestyle. Oh. And so it's like, how do I get away, or not necessarily get away, but how do I begin to transition from shoot 'em in the, you know, because for me, man, I listen to a lot of reggae music, and for me, like, that's kind of a happy medium for me to not really be feeling the energy of a murder and dropping your head off at your mama's house, you know, that type of thing. But just kind of some good vibes, some positive music, some things that I can really, you know, mellow out to and feel comfortable listening to, that I'm not damaging my brain cells well. Or speaking these things that are negative to my subconscious that are, you know, may play out later on in life, or I just may have an attitude or whatever the case may be. But I think all of us have this part of us that is struggling to understand what part of hip hop belongs in my life, you know, at whatever point you are, and, you know, how much of it is, you know, just for that crowud of people who really are immersed and enthralled still, like you were probably at one point in time.
No doubt. And, you know, I think that's a great way to put it. And again, this is why it's so important that, you know, that Gregory's doing the things that he's doing, because he is keeping people into that sort of positive aspect of the genre, man. But I also think, you know, you talk about these different stages, and music in general is really like that too, because I mean, there's this, when you're young, you know, you kind of you get a little older, you like,
might want to turn a club up.
You just like, let me just put some 40? Jazz on. You know, and so I think being able to departmentalize that in a way is healthy. You know what I mean? Because again, I mean, there's some hip hop, man, that I like, you know, but I try to departmentalize it. And if I'm feeling this way, I might need to hear that, man, because, you know, I'm trying to let off some steam. Exactly. I just got pulled over. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I got to let off some steam right now. So, yeah, I might want to do that right now. But
I want to hit that on NWA track.
Exactly. You know?
Exactly.
But later on, no, man, you know, because I'm trying to keep, like you say, man, I'm trying to keep positive thoughts, you know, in my mind and so forth. And so, but brother, what are your thoughts on that?
My thing is this, miseducation, you know, Lauryn Hill style, you know, the population is miseducated on what hip hop is, like the culture of hip hop, 73, 74, DJ Kool Herc, Bambaataa, things like that. So, I mean, it's like, you have to understand that a lot of individuals are not educated on what this hip hop culture is. So there's a lack of knowledge. So when there's a lack of knowledge, there's a lack of understanding. So this, like, my approach is to actually educate individuals about what hip hop culture truly is. you know, on the principles of peace, yeah. love, unity, and having fun.
No doubt.
Like, that's what it represents. That's how it came with DJ Kool Herc. That's how it came when African Mbada came through the year after. So, I mean, it's like setting this culture of rebuilding, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. of basically educating individuals on the culture and how do we rise together in a positive sense.
I kind of wanted to hear some of your insight on, because, you know, we're talking about this whole the conflict and, you know, deciding what side you want to fight for, demolish, rebuild. Mike's talking about the dark side, you know, but as hip hop continues to grow and as hip hop continues to evolve, what do you say to the so-called gatekeepers of hip hop who allow, you know, certain parts of it to be distributed or come out rather not as against some of the early foundational meanings of hip hop?
I think the approach we should take on is once again, it goes back to the education. Mm-hmm. You know, I believe that the so-called gatekeepers should educate. Mm-hmm. You know, they should get more involved in the community. They should get more involved with actually assisting up-and-coming artists. So it's like reproduction. Like, how do you rejuvenate the hip-hop culture? If you're not going back and helping, you know, assisting individuals, the new generation, to plug them into, yo, this is what we need should be doing, and educate you on what way to go, like, that's the issue. And that's how it is in a black community, period. Like, you have leaders in the community, but you don't see the leaders in the community, you know, walking the streets or teaching the kids or bringing programs or, like, assisting the up-and-coming businessmen of the next generation. You know, I have a guy on my committee for this Oklahoma Hip Hop Festival, and his name is Earl Mason. Guy's 63 years old, you know. And the thing about it is, he said that back in his time when he was young and he was up and coming as a businessman, that the older generation didn't help him. They didn't assist him. They didn't teach him the way, you know. They didn't give him, you know, the knowledge, the information to say, hey, well, you can go this way and you can make this happen. You know, and that's what he's doing for me. You know, this guy's 30 years older than I am.
Yeah.
You know, and he's like, this is how it goes down. This is how you do it. This is how you make these connections. And he's connecting me to other people to broaden my horizon and my vision to come, you know, to manifest. So those are the things that we should do as, like, lyricists or MCs or the gatekeepers. Like, go back into the communities, go back into the new generation of the MCs or anybody in the hip-hop culture and reach back, show them the way, and just recreate it, keep developing it over and over again. And that's how you build it.
And the problem with that, though, is, you know, I'm going to be insignificant then. You know, if I pass on that knowledge, if I let you have the keys now, all of a sudden I'm insignificant. And I think that's the problem, not only in the black community, but in leadership all across the board. That's a whole nother conversation we need to have.
We're going
to
have it.
But hey, listen, we just had another brother step into the studio.
Looking smooth, too.
Yeah, he is, though, isn't he? And he stepped in, and I want to have, first of all, hold on a second. I want to have Brother G go ahead and give us a proper introduction.
Yeah, this is Angel Little. He's actually the program coordinator for the Elemental Hip Hop program. I picked him up. He joined the team about 2 years ago. So we've been at it pretty steadily, you know, going in, sacrificing. He's devoted a lot of time. You know, he's proven himself.
Well, that's cool. And what I'm going to say is, let me just let the listeners know, okay, the only reason why we let the brother bust in is because Gregory Jerome is in the house, and he got it like that. Otherwise, otherwise he have to know the secret passcode, and I know he don't know that. Yeah, the secret passcode, brother. We're going to share that with you sometime. But man, just tell the listening audiences, man, you know, who you are and how you got connected, man, with Gregory Jerome, man, and just share a little bit.
So my name is Angel Little, of course. I've been doing hip-hop since I was, like, what, maybe four or five. So during that time, man, I was just, like, really trying to figure out who I was in the culture, really trying to develop. As I got older, I started picking up the elements individually. I started with graffiti style writing. I went from that to breaking. You know, every kid back in the day is like, oh, it's the cutest thing to do to break. So then I moved from that into MCing. I used to battle cats in the bathroom in high school. Then I went from that into DJing, you know, Culture Shock 2. I was there at that jam, and I got a chance to see Shock B get up on the stage. And I really watched what he was doing on the tables and, like, inspired me. So I really absorbed the culture as a whole. I used to battle a lot. I used to come out and get together with people. But as I started moving forward, I let it go for a little while and just kind of got into, like, I guess a commercialized mind frame and really just started rocking what was popular. And I hurt my leg, and that changed everything. You know, after I hurt my leg, it was just like, man, I can't do like I want to anymore. So I need to get back into something. And I guess I just kind of got thrown back into the culture. And when I got thrown in, a lot of the knowledge I had as a youth and as a kid just came back in. And that's when I started really getting into teaching. And so I started teaching other people the culture. And then I started realizing that I know more now as a teacher than I think I ever would have, like, actually doing all of that. So it really helped me to step up. And this guy here, Gregory over here, Mr. G, I had an event called One Soul where we did a Four Elements presentation. And he came out and he was like, hey, you know, I'll talk with you later on, man. I'm trying to make some moves. And he followed through. He hit me up and he was like, hey, I got this program and this is what we're trying to do. Looking to see if you want to be a part of it. I'm like, yeah, that's exactly what I'm wanting to do right there. That's everything I'm wanting to do. And so we connected on that. And ever since then, it's been the mushroom cloud. It's been a nuclear explosion and just a lot of growth and a lot of development.
Well, you know, I see a dynamic duo, yes, you know, sir, sitting right here. Almost as bad as me and you, DT.
Almost.
You know what? We not gonna. They trying to get there. You know, I think we the dynamic duo right here, the black dynamic duo. DT.
Wonder twin power. Over
well,
here.
That's right. Wonder twin power over here, right? And but man, I tell you what, I couldn't be more happy with the work that both of you are doing. Talk a little bit about the festival that's coming up. If you want to do that.
Yeah. Well, the festival is going to be September the 18th and 19th down on Film Row at the Paramount. And that's around the 700-800 block of Sheridan, right there intersection with Lee. So this festival is actually a flagship, a platform for the Oklahoma hip-hop community. It's to develop a platform for them to be in a situation on a stage that they've never been on before. And it's basically it's a couple of different factors to this thing. It's more than just a hip hop festival. So one of the aspects of it is like to unify the whole culture of hip hop in Oklahoma, to unite basically, and to also open other doors and highways and avenues for people in the region, people nationally, internationally, so we can actually build something. It's also for educational and intellectual presentation. There's also interactive things that's going to be going on. So there's going to be an open mic stage. There's going to be an interactive graffiti wall. So individuals can actually, like, home in and, like, touch it, taste it, smell it, like, actually feel this hip-hop culture.
Now, you know I'm – you said open mic?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
You going to put some of your poetry out there? Hey,
listen.
Come on.
Matter of fact, I read one today to start the show.
All right.
So you
Friday
know
the, night.
Yeah, don't open up the
Friday night,
you
man.
You open up the mic.
Friday night. It's open.
And you know DT Dangerous now.
Come on with
there.
It.
Hey, he'll come down.
Come on,
there.
Come on.
Freestyle.
Hey, okay? Bring it. That's what it's for. We want you to get a piece. Come get some of this stage,
okay,
man.
Okay.
And matter of fact, it's called Poetic Justice Stage.
Oh, man, I love it.
Yeah.
Poetic Justice. Yeah.
So we have every element is going to be live. There's going to be the breakers. There's going to be the graffiti. There's going to be the DJs. There's going to be the MCs, like everything is live. We even have like workshops on Saturday morning from 9 to 11, each element. There's also going to be a kids hour from 12 to 2. So some of our students and some of our other friends are facilitators as well. So we're just going to get all of our students in the past from each community that we worked at all across the metro and put them on stage. Give them a chance and opportunity to say, hey, you know, you worked all this time. You did a performance at your school. Let's give you an opportunity to be on the stage and a platform in front of, like, the masses and see how it goes. Like, you know, we have to be able – that's the thing that we go back when we were talking about, the gatekeepers. Mm-hmm. Like, how do you continue on the culture? Like, if you don't teach the culture of being a businessman, how you expect another businessman to come up in the hood if you're in the hood, right?
Yeah.
So it's like – teach them, show them the way, give them opportunity to display themselves, their skills, so it builds confidence. And then it also, it carries on with them throughout the life.
Yeah.
And that's the cycle. So if we're able to present that, which, not if, when we present that,
absolutely.
That's the part that we're trying to do as well. And then also just bring in the community of Oklahoma together, period. Like, it needs to be, this is an opportunity for diversity,
yes.
cultural education.
Yes.
You know, this is, it's everything. Mm-hmm. We all relate to hip hop at some point in time in our life, mm-hmm. you know, from the 70s all the way to now.
And so if they wanted to find out further information about, you know, the festival, how would they contact or where would they need to go?
They could go visit on the website, www.oklahomahiphopfestival.com. Mm. All the information is there, schedule, you can buy tickets. Friday night is free, actually, for the public to come out and enjoy themselves. And then Saturday is $20 fee, and it's from 9 a.m. to midnight.
Wow. But what time do kids need to leave, though?
Kids could probably leave. Depends on who your kids are.
It's everybody leave at 9:30, huh?
But honestly, all everybody that's performing it is socially conscious.
Wonderful.
And everything is clean.
Yes.
So
yes.
That's something that
that's
they
what
have
I
to
want to bring out.
Yep. That's something they have to sign off on.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, all night long, they can stay out and enjoy themselves for the weekend.
And that's why I love what you do, man, because it's for all ages. It's for all nationalities, all races. I mean, I love what you're doing because we need this, not just here in Oklahoma City. I mean, we're fortunate to have what you brothers are doing here, but we need this to be duplicated across the country. And I like what you're doing. You move in hip-hop in a very positive way. So, man, thank you so much for taking out your time and coming down here to One Mic, One Voice. Folks, hey, we have some guests, DT, don't we?
Man, we have some dynamic guests each and every time.
Man, that brother Gregory Jerome, man, he came in here. That's why I said we have to put limits, man.
You got to chop him down. He can't talk too much. We got to put him right
here. We appreciate you coming on.
You're doing great things. As always, history will speak of us. Somewhere in the distant future, Scribe will reach down deep into the archives of our time. And what will she find? Will she discover that we overcame our differences? Will she find that out of many, we became one? Or will she find that we solved nothing and remain a divided people? Yes, history will speak of us.